Podcast, where we talk about the culture and design of Gangplank. I'm Jade Meskill.
I'm Derek Neighbors.
Nicole Nedich.
And Luke Norris.
All right, we have Nicole and Luke here from Code for America. Tell us a little bit about what Code for America is about, and then we'll get into some of the other things we want to talk about.
Yeah, sure. So Code for America is a nonprofit startup based in San Francisco, California, and we have the notion that not only coding across America takes place just in San Francisco, Boston, and Chicago, but it actually is happening around the U.S. and around the world now. And so we aim to help cities better leverage technology, become more innovative in the way that they respond to the needs of citizens, use technology, and engage with citizens to kind of create a democracy or a government that's for the people, of the people, and most importantly, by the people.
Awesome. Yeah, that we were talking right before we hit record about how this ties in well with Gangplank's local initiative. So on the DangerCast, we've just started getting into the details of some of the different initiatives that we have. So, Derek, you had some interesting thoughts about how those align. Maybe you could share that with the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Code for America does are, we've got a local brigade here. And we've done several hackathons, and so our labs program as well as our local program participate in Code for America quite a bit and a number of the initiatives around it. And I think one of the things that gets lost for a lot of people that tend to be more techie in nature is they think that it is solely about code and like hacking, but in reality, I think it's really about changing how we think about how we govern people and what the governance model looks like. And a large part of that is creating more transparency and creating better ways to engage and making it easier for the people to be active in how they're governed and how they run their city and how they create their city, which I think completely overlaps with what we're trying to do with our local program, which is really, you know, not only those things, but also about how do we create attachment to place, how do we do placemaking, and a big part of that is feeling like you're an active participant in moving your community forward. And so I think there's a whole lot of overlap. We certainly tried to get Code for America in Chandler 3 or 4 years ago when the program first started, and it just things weren't quite right for that to happen. So we're super excited to see them do some regional stuff here with some partners. So, I mean, I'm excited. I mean, I'm super excited about what the potential is there. Maybe you guys could tell us a little bit about, I mean, we're familiar with it, but I don't know if all the listeners are. Maybe you could tell us a little about Code for America brings in some fellows to work with a city and community partner. Maybe you could tell us a little about like how somebody, how those fellows are chosen and what it looks like, how many there are, and what the relationship is between the city that they go to and kind of what the expectations are or aren't, and kind of what the goals are around some of that.
Sure. So Code for America operates, it's a competitive program, so both cities apply to be a Code for America city, and fellows apply to be fellows. We had about 650 applicants this year that were from all over the country, and we chose about 30 that are going to go into 10 cities this year. There are 3 fellows per city, and usually the team of 3 consists of a designer, a UX designer, somebody who's thinking about the user experience. A programmer, so somebody who's going to code that experience, right? And then a project manager or a researcher, something in that type of a role. So those 3 fellows, they come out, they go through a month of training in the month of January, and then they come out to each of the cities. Mesa is one of those cities this year, and they're going to embed themselves in the cities for the entire month and just do a ton of research. And that's going to go into creating an application that has impact and scale within the community.
And so all of the prior work that's been done by fellows in cities, is that available for other cities to use? Or how does that work? Is it the property then of the city, or does it go back into open source, or what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we're most interested in and kind of committed to is building in an open source environment. And so I think fundamentally, if you think about the role of cities, whether they're, you know, cities with, you know, 2 million people or, you know, 70,000, fundamentally cities face the same types of problems in the way that they deliver service to their citizens. And so when we go into cities, we build applications that are in an open source environment that allows for those applications to be redeployed in other communities. And so the fellows' primary objectives is to create a new piece of technology that impacts some type of problem that exists in the local community that we also know is, evident in other communities around the U.S. But while they are there, they have the opportunity to turn back to some of their, you know, fellow alumni, as well as Code for America, talk about how you can, you know, redeploy applications like Adopt a Hydrant, or how you can leverage other, you know, types of technologies that maybe have now spun out into civic startups, which is something that we also really promote and is kind of an interesting part of our model in the way that we help grow companies that can now become a part of the system of providing new service to government and kind of getting a piece of this $140 billion you know, industry that is just huge for state and local IT spend. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting that I don't think enough people choose to understand enough about how they're governed to understand that cities generally are just giant companies that provide a number of services. So we tend to think of fire service and police service, and we kind of do those, like, that's pretty easy to translate because it's like having a plumber come out, right?
So, you know, it's very tangible.
Yeah, it's very tangible. I understand. I pick up a phone, I call it, somebody comes out, performs some service, like, I get that, right? But they don't necessarily think of, you know, zoning or planning or code enforcement or those type of things nearly being as service-based as other things. And so I find it very interesting that we do, Jade and I both do a lot of consulting in the startup or innovator space and technology. And what I really hear you describing is a small startup team, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a designer, you've got a developer, and you've got a product person of some kind, right? Whether it's research or management, whatever, you've got somebody kind of looking out for the greater thing. And you're trying to attach them to a problem space within a service, right? How do we improve service delivery of some kind, either whether it be holistic service delivery or an individual service delivery? And how do we basically create a mini startup around that in a short amount of time and deliver and iterate on it? And I think, to me, the thing that's exciting is if we can start to get cities to start to believe this way, not only there's opportunity for a private sector, but I think there's opportunity for the public sector to start to say, you know, instead of having these monolithic, siloed departments for service delivery, could we instead line up our organization to say, what problems are we trying to solve? And can we create these very small teams? Maybe it's not three people, it's maybe it's five people, six people that are focused on how do we best solve that problem, right? People need to do permitting. Maybe we have a permitting team and that's like their job to integrate technology and problem solving and design and a number of things to say, how do we make that super easy in our city? How do we make that the best service possible? So is part of that, like, what are some of the things that you've seen developed in previous classes or previous segments of Code for America and other cities? What are some of the biggest kind of successes or lessons learned that you guys have seen come out of there?
Yeah, so maybe I'll talk a little bit about something that came out of Philadelphia in part just because you just kind of touched on some of the opportunity, and then Nicole definitely could speak a little bit about what was built in Oakland in San Francisco. So you brought up planning as a function, right? And so a lot of really important decisions about cities and the way they're built and the infrastructure that goes into those are made at, you know, small meetings where they're at 7 o'clock at night in a small room in City Hall. They're not well publicized. Sometimes the room can accommodate more than 10 people.
And they're
pretty
boring.
And they're totally boring, right?
I've been to a lot of them.
Yeah, I've been there too.
Right. So in Philadelphia, which was a fellowship project in 2012, they basically said, this is a problem that exists for us in other communities. So how can we fundamentally change the way that citizens interact with these planning decisions? And so we looked at that and decided, you know, what if we build something with really basic SMS-based texting capabilities that overcomes some of the issues of the digital divide? And what about now asking people for input at the point of service where they're encountering problems or maybe where these decisions are going to actually impact? So if you now have this poster on a bus or you're at a, you know, line in City Hall, like if you ask these questions, now you can get really good real-time input from the people that are experiencing those problems. And by using just basic texting features and not smartphone-enabled or having people go to a website, you're actually getting feedback from people that probably, A, would never have come to that city meeting, but more importantly, people that probably would never have had the ability to ever know that they could provide feedback. So that's a great example. I mean, we've done some incredible work in Oakland where Nicole actually was the city partner and also did some really great stuff in San Francisco and, you know, San Mateo County this year as well.
So in Oakland this year, we were looking at sort of access to information and what that looked like. As you kind of touched on, you know, the government provides service, but we don't necessarily always think of it as a service provider in the same way that you would imagine some of the private sector businesses would be. And part of that is because we kind of have a monopoly on the service that we provide, right? There's nobody else that is competing for the service delivery mechanism. So we don't have anything to sort of gauge ourselves towards except for maybe other cities. So something that was happening in Oakland a year ago when we were starting our Code for America fellowship was we had Occupy Oakland there, and there was a lot of requests for public information about how things were handled around the Occupy Oakland protests in Oakland. And so we were seeing a lot of backlash about people not feeling like they were being able to get the information that they needed about how things transpired and sort of how the city was governing the town during this time, right? So tons of service requests coming in, tons of public information requests coming in. People wanted copies of all emails, you know, over a certain period of time, things like that. And the city wasn't really providing those in a really timely manner. Mm-hmm. And so we were getting a lot of press about how that was happening. And it was hard on the city. It was a hard time for the city. So the fellows came in and they saw some of this tension and just sort of this lack of trust between the citizens and the city, right, that was kind of happening because of all of this that was happening at the time. And so they looked at how do we provide access to information in a more transparent and more easy to digest way. What they worked on was a public records request tracker, basically. And so you can submit a public records request. In the past, you submit a public records request, it kind of gets thrown over a wall. You don't really know where it's going and who's seeing it and when it's going to be responded to.
Right.
And they created a public view for that so that it was all transparent, so that you could see what requests were made. You can search on those requests. You can see the responses that came from the city. And it really helped the city in ways that were great, because the city is now able to actually see the different requests that are coming through also, and be able to monitor how it's doing as a city as well. In San Francisco, we saw another application that was developed that was around food stamps. And basically what they noticed in San Francisco is that a lot of people were falling off food stamps, and they didn't even realize that that was happening until they were in line at the grocery store. And they went to go pay for their food, and they had their kids with them, and all of a sudden they were ineligible for service. Hmm. They had been getting these letters in the mail, but they were these long letters. They were very complicated letters. They were the kinds of things that you kind of shove to the side until you have time to deal with.
Sure.
And so they took a look at that letter, and they thought, like, well, okay, why is this happening, and how do we notify people of this before they actually fall out of the system? So they had started out wanting to make a web application, and then they realized that the people that they were trying to target really weren't using the internet. They didn't really have smartphones. And so they created a text message application that just, it's a very simple application, but it just goes out right before you're about to fall off food stamps, and you get a notification so that you can call and you can make the arrangements and you don't fall off, right? It's a very simple application, but it's going to do a ton for the city of San Francisco, and it's something that can be leveraged across cities.
I mean, I think it's interesting to bring up something that I think a lot of technologists forget, which is we tend to be the minority, not the majority, when it comes to our level of access to technology, to smartphones, to high-speed internet, to a number of those things, and that a lot of the services that are provided by cities are not available. And so some of the design hacks or some of the hacks are how do we use older technology, or how do we use things that we wouldn't traditionally think of but can bring kind of that like hacker ethos or that technical bent to it to provide something that's existed for a long time but people haven't thought of it as a way to deliver it. I think the other really interesting thing I heard you guys talking about earlier, and when we'd kind of gone through the process of exploring for Chandler, one of the things that is unique, I think, about Code for America is it really requires kind of a community partner as well as a city partner. So it's not just enough for a city to say, step up and say, hey, we want some fellows, let's do this. But I think that you guys recognize that there's a need for community. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about why that decision is made and kind of what some of the expectations are on the community partner side, outside of potentially helping for funding or whatnot. But what is the expectation of why did you decide to include community, and how how do they fit into that process?
Yeah, so I mean, it's really multifaceted, right? So one of the reasons for that is oftentimes governments are doing really incredible, really innovative things that there's not necessarily a communication channel for the city to share, or there's not a lot of visibility into at the community. And so as we have community partners, we have an opportunity to highlight some of the work that's really happening in cities that are making a difference. The other part of it is, you know, we fundamentally want to engage citizens in the process of designing government and, more importantly, understanding how government can respond to their needs and how they can participate in kind of the shared economy. And so as we have community partners, we start to build a network of folks that are committed to demonstrating capacity, want to step up to that. In some cities that we're working in, we have as many as 25, you know, partners that are putting money on the table to say, help us bring Code for America to our city. You know, we're incredibly fortunate here in the you know, area to have ASU as the primary supporter of the project. And I think that, you know, speaks volumes to not only who ASU is and the importance and value that they place on innovation, but also the incredible access that they have to people, both academics, students, community leaders across the region. And so when you combine that with a really great, forward-looking, innovative group of, you know, folks in government, the success is just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, like, I think Gangplank plays that role a lot of times for the cities that we're partners with. Is I think we see two things happen is we see a lot of people that tend to have distrust towards cities. And so giving them like an intermediary where it's easy to interface with Gangplank and there's a high level of trust there, then it kind of bridges like a friend of a friend. Like we can make the introduction and help get involved there. But I think it also comes back the other direction. And that a lot of times the city, they're not techie enough or they don't hit the right creative community that they're okay telling their story to somebody who gets a snail mail water bill or, you know, goes to the, you know, library on a regular basis or the senior center, but they're not so good at the really busy, fast-paced person who like gets all of their consumption through email or Twitter or Facebook or different things. And so it's sometimes nice to be able to submit those things back. I think we definitely see a much higher level of engagement in people that participate in Gangplank, and that all we're really doing is kind of rebroadcasting stuff that's already coming straight out of the PR department or the city staff or whatnot. It's just stuff that they would never ever see because it's released in a press release that nobody will read, opposed to a 140 character tweet with a link to a newspaper article or something similar. So I think it's a great strategy. I mean, I love what you guys are doing.
So we're going to wrap this up, but I'm going to ask you a really hard question first before we close it. You know, Gangplank, part of our core philosophy is that we need a radical transformation of how communities are built and grown and developed. And the thing I'm curious to hear from you guys is, what does it look like when you've accomplished what you want to accomplish with Code for America? Like, how does the world look if that happens?
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely a tough question. So I think it looks like a totally different environment that we live in, right, where there's higher levels of trust between citizens and government that's driven by transparency and engagement on both sides. We're doing a lot of work around what are the principles that 21st century cities look like. And those, you know, include a lot of things like they are engaging in technology-led innovation. They're creating a culture of innovation. They're leveraging partnerships both with public and private institutions, but also around, you know, multi-jurisdictional or multi, you know, municipality type, you know, things. So I think fundamentally it's going to change all of the ways that a lot of us think about government. While they're still providing these core services, I think what it's going to change is more of the attitudinal response that all of us have to government. And I think the most aspirational role is what if people could love their governments as much as they love their iPhone and their Android device? Mm-hmm. So when you think about that as the aspirational goal, I think that kind of gets you there.
That was an excellent on-the-spot response. I like that. All right. Well, that sums it up. Thank you guys so much for coming out and recording with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time on the DangerCast.
It's Gangplank, they're a creative bunch. Come and bring your laptop and drink the fruit punch. with some rum.